My name is Danwei Tran Luciani. I have a Chinese first name, a Vietnamese middle name, and an Italian last name. And from that, I guess you can draw the conclusion that I'm born and raised in Sweden. I'm a technical evangelist from Microsoft, and I'm based in Sweden, in Stockholm, actually. And that was where I grew up. My parents are both Chinese, and that's why I have a Chinese first name. Before my parents moved to Sweden, they were living in Vietnam, and that's why I used to have a Tran as my last name, until 2 years ago when I married an Italian guy and decided to take on his last name just to add to the complexity of my current name. So my name is Danwei Tran Luciani. And if you have any questions, please hold on to your thoughts until after the presentation. I will make sure that we will have time for questions and answers at the end of the session. And if there's any questions that pop up in your head afterwards, you can always reach me throughout the day. I'll be here. And even after today, you can reach me either on my email address. It's danwei.tran@microsoft.com. Or you can reach me on Twitter. And my Twitter alias is danweitran. Right. Before we jump into the Metro design, I can tell you two random facts about myself. And that's all you need to know. I use the Dvorak keyboard layout. And I like bunnies. That's all. If you want to know anything else, just ask afterwards, and I'll try to answer. So I'm here to talk and tell you how you can design Metro-style apps. And I actually want to extend the title of my session to include designing beautiful Metro-style apps, because that's what we are aiming for. We don't want to aim for the okay thing. We want to aim for the great thing. And good is the greatest enemy of great. You guys probably have heard of that quote before. And I'm going to share some principles about Metro design, and hopefully that will help you think in the right terms in order to design great Metro-style apps. And when I talk about Metro-style apps, just to clear that description up, Metro design is something that Microsoft has come up with. It's a design principle and design language. And whatever you're making, you can make it Metro-ish. But when we're talking about Metro-style apps, we're talking about the Metro apps for Windows 8, the one that runs in the Metro view, not on the desktop. So when I talk about Metro-style apps, it's the apps for Windows 8. But you can incorporate this Metro design principles in other projects as well. So the key takeaways after this 1 hour are that you should have an understanding and an overview of the Metro-style design principles. And there are five of them, and I will go through each of one within this hour to make sure you understand what they mean and not just learn them by heart. I know them by heart, and I hope that you will learn them by heart sooner or later, too. This is a screenshot of Windows 8, the Metro view, and here is where the Metro-style apps will live. And hopefully one of your apps will also live on the start screen on a user's Metro-style view, so to speak. And what makes an app pop is not only the performance anymore and the functionality. It is also about the user experience, what you can offer the user, because there are many apps that do the same things. So what will make your app stand out of the crowd? Well, we believe that using Metro-style thinking, you will be able to offer a greater user experience, hopefully. So in order to use Metro design language, you should have an understanding of what it is. And I want to start by telling you the three main inspiration that has led to the Metro design. And these are the three inspiration sources that the Metro design team incorporated when they defined the Metro design. And it's influenced by modern design, and it's influenced by international typographic style and motion design. And when we talk about modern design, we mean the Bauhaus. Back in around 1930, it was very, up till then, it was very, how do you say, popular to have interior design that looked sort of like nature. I have a friend that is an interaction designer. He said that back in those days, the architects sort of had a nature envy. They made chairs that had very decorative feet that was formed like lion feet, and the armchair was like curved and very decorative. And you had wallpapers that was very flowery and with lots of leaves. So it felt like you were in the jungle even though you were indoors because of this furniture that had sort of like a nature envy and tried to emulate something they weren't. And then the Bauhaus effect came and said that less is more. We should focus on function and make function beautiful. So a beautiful table can be just a rectangular surface with four feet. It's functional, but it can still be beautiful. And that's the thought of Bauhaus, and that was around 1930. And that's one of the inspiration behind the metro design. And I can also mention that this design friend of mine, he mentioned to me that he thinks what happened in the architecture, the evolution there, is also reflected now in the digital world. So in a long time, we've had this all these interfaces that sort of emulated reality. So he meant that interaction designer and UI designer had sort of a reality envy instead of the nature envy that the architects had. Like a button would look like a physical button. And when you press it, it would snap inwards and then jump back when you release your mouse click. It doesn't have to be like that. It doesn't have to look like a button anymore. So he means that the modern design in the UI world is moving into this less is more thinking as well, just like what happened in the architecture world. So the Metro team was very inspired by this modern design, and they were also inspired by all these signage, all these transportation signs that you see in the airport and in the subway system and so on. And what's interesting with these signs is that they're very clear. They're focusing on fonts and icons to inform people in a quick way, people that are on their moves, how to get from A to B as quick as possible. And another thing that's interesting with these signage is that they're universal. You can be in Tokyo without knowing Japanese and still make your way from where you want to go by looking at the subway map because it's so focused on the information and not on the adornment around the signs. So this is something that the Metro team wanted to incorporate in the Metro design, to focus on the content and use that as a design element. You don't have to add pretty things and pretty frames around the things, but you can use the content itself and have that look beautiful and informative. It should help the user get his or her stuff done as quick as possible. And when we talk about international typography, it's about Swiss design. It's the focus on typography. Swiss design is a motion in the design world that focuses very much on the numbers and the letters and using them very much to make things beautiful. You don't need to add pictures all the time to make a design layout or something look attractive, but you can use the actual content, the text and the numbers itself to convey something beautiful. Motion design is another thing that was an inspiration source to the Metro team. And motion design you'll see a lot in the movies. You know those title sequence that shows before a movie plays that have those texts saying who was the director of the movie, who's the star, co-star, and the co-star, and so on. Those motion that's applied to the text is something that will evoke emotion and give you a little glimpse, a little hint of what the movie is about. And that's something you also can get inspired by, using motion to evoke emotion into the users and giving your app a sort of like a specific personality. And this North by Northwest title sequence is very, it's sort of like a cult title sequence, so I recommend you check it out when you have time. And if you have more time, you can always look on YouTube, for example, and search for title sequence or a title sequence made by Saul Bass. They're very interesting in how he is using motion on text to make it more alive. So these are the three key influences behind Metro design. It's the modern design, it's about Bauhaus, less is more, and making function beautiful. And it's about international typographic style, making sure that the content is put in focus, using text and numbers as design elements, and using the grid also to align the text so they create some sort of a balance. Emotion design is the influence also to create content that feels alive, even though it might be using motion you can create content that's alive and give it some sort of personality. So the Metroid style design principles are built on top of this inspiration that they had. And these are the Metroid style design principles. We've had certain principles circling around for the last past years. There were a couple of principles when we talked about Windows Phone, and that was when Metroid first emerged in the Windows Phone product. And then Microsoft noticed that other product team within Microsoft got inspired by this Metroid design and tried to incorporate Metroid into their product. So what the Metroid team did was to create some sort of collected principles about Metroid design. So these are the principles that should be the same, no matter what product you're using. And then you can build your own view, your own Metroid language on top of this principle. But the principle should always stay the same. And the principles are timeless. They're not something that should change in the near future, but the design language that each product group has might change. And the design language might include colors and font types and so on that will make sure that the brand shines through. While these design principle is something that's more fundamental. And design principles are 1, pride in craftsmanship, 2, fast and fluid, 3, to be authentically digital, 4, to do more with less, and lastly but not least, to win as one. And for the rest of the session, I will spend time going through each of these and give you an example of how you can use these principles to guide you when you make your own Metroid style app. So the first one, pride in craftsmanship. It's all about pixel pushing, you might say. It's about aligning content along a grid to create balance, to create focus for the eye. And make sure when you create stuff, make sure you know which stuff in the screen is your main star. It's just like a movie. There will be one star and then there will be co-stars and supporting actors. So make sure you know which content is in focus. Make sure that one will draw the eye of the user first. So using the grid, you can lay out different elements and create different kinds of layouts that will look consistent throughout the Metroid style app ecosystem. So you can create different kinds of layout, but make sure you put them along the grid so it creates a balance. And there are some templates that you can use in Visual Studio that will help you create some sort of layout that you can use to build your UI upon. For example, the grid template, you can change those squares and those template text to put your own content and create a beautiful RSS reader, for example. And also, notice that the content scrolls horizontally, and that's what we want to. That stuff at the edge sort of peeks out to create some sort of curiosity so people know that there's more to see on the right side, so they will pan further. And there's another kind of template that we'll use. You can use, for example, to show article with a big picture and then flowing text. Also notice that it's a horizontal scroll, it's not vertical. So you can create something similar to this. And if you use these templates and if you use the grid, no matter what app the user will use, they will sort of feel like they belong to each other because there will be a balance and the headers will be on the same place and there will be the right spacing across the apps. And that creates some sort of familiarity to the user so they feel confident that your app belongs and feel like a native app. So, like I said, it's not about just the headers, but the text. Everything aligns to each other if you use the grid as the base. And for designers, this is a natural thing. Designers and interaction design have been using grids for a long time. So, if developers also take this to heart, it'll be easier to create beautiful Metroid style apps. So, the second principle is about being fast and fluid. It's not just about performance-wise. It's not just about your app being responsive and functional. It's also about making the user trust your app to be able to interact with it with confidence. And you can do that by making sure you always give feedback to the user whenever the user interacts with it. For example, on touchdown, there should be some sort of feedback if it's an interactive area that the user tapped. And whenever the user release its finger, it should be some sort of commit feedback to let the user know that my input is being received and processed. You can use motion, for example, to do that, to create some sort of navigation understanding to let the user know how she or he is navigating inside your app by using the right animation inside. And you can also use animation to emphasize something that's interactive or something that's new, or to emphasize the star on the screen so the eye is drawn to the animation itself. Now, being fast and fluid also means being very touch-friendly, because Windows 8 will run on the Slate, as you probably know. So if you make sure you design for touch first, using the controls that are provided by Microsoft, it will automatically actually translate to also work for the keyboard and the mouse. So try to design for touch first, and it will work for both the keyboard and the mouse as well. So there are some people that question this touch first approach, saying that if I design for touch first, is that some way of steering away from supporting user with keyboard and mouse? No. It's just like before, in the old days, when it was when we interacted with the computers just using command prompt, it was the keyboard that was the input method. And when they introduced the mouse, people were skeptical about the mouse as well. There are some people that said, there's no way the mouse is going to stay for a long time. It won't be effective. Nobody will switch between the keyboard and mouse and try to steer a little arrow on the screen using some weird device on the table and try to click on this tiny little area. It's not precise, and nobody will switch between the two. It will reduce the typing speed. Now, I'm all about typing speed, and that's why I use Dvorak, but I don't agree with this, and as we all know now, the mouse wasn't just a hype. It's still here, and it didn't even replace the keyboard, and that was not the point either. The point with the mouse was just to be a complement to the keyboard, so it's good for some sort of interactions, and the keyboard is still great for some interactions, like typing. And it's the same thing with touch. Touch is not supposed to replace the current input devices like keyboard and mouse. It's just here as a complement. For some interactions, touch is great and natural. For other interactions, it's still necessary to have a mouse and a keyboard. I think very few of you guys will want to have a coding environment that's only meant for touch. That would be sort of inefficient, I would imagine. So we have a couple of touch gesture in Windows 8 that you should use. These are the ones that come out of the box and will be easily translated into being accommodated for both mouse and keyboard. So we have press hold to learn more. If you tap and hold, there should be a context menu of some sort. And you can tap. It's pretty intuitive. Tap is something you select, slide to drag, swipe to select. If you select something, you just swipe down quickly, you can select the item. You can pinch to zoom, swipe from edge to get system and app UI, the app bar and the charms that we'll get into in a second, and then rotate to rotate. So it's pretty common sense gestures. Just to highlight the swipe to select, you've probably seen some demos, for example, on the start screen. When you want to select one of those tiles, you just swipe it down. And that's something you can use in your app too when you should select something. Try to make sure that the user can interact with the content directly as much as possible. That's also something that will add to the fast and fluid feeling. If I can directly manipulate the content and not having to select it and use buttons, that'll also feel like direct interaction with the elements itself. For example, if I were to make a game, maybe I wouldn't have to put controls that I have to touch to move, like back and forward and right and left buttons. That I would have to tap. Maybe I'll do it so that when I tap and drag the character, that's how I move that character around on the screen. So try to think that the user should interact directly with the content as much as possible. And the semantic zoom is an interesting gesture, and we'll get into that a little bit later. It's about not only zooming and making images bigger and larger, but it's about semantic zooming to get more details about the current view. It's not about navigation, but it's to show the current information that you see on the screen in a different way. And I'll show you some examples of it later. So Windows 8 will run on the Slate, and the Windows team have made some user studies just to see how people interact with the Slate. And what they've noticed is that a lot of people use the slate when they're on the go, and a lot of people use the slate at home, but even if you're at home and sitting down, people hold the slate in different ways. Some people hold the slate with both hands and only have the thumbs free to interact with the screen. Some people place the slate on their lap and have both hands free. And some people hold the slate on one hand and use the other hand to interact. So in order to accommodate all these different users, you should also keep that in mind and try to imagine in what context your user will be in to make your app as usable as possible. So it will be fast and fluid for the user when they're using it. A lot of people use the tablet by holding it using both thumbs. And just for an anecdote, what the Windows 8 team did was that they collected a lot of people and asked them to play with finger paint. They gave them a piece of paper and a cardboard that was the size of a tablet. And then the users got to dip their thumbs in one color of paint and then hold the cardboard and the paper and use the thumb and draw the areas where they could reach with the thumb. And then they would dip their thumb in another color and draw other areas where they could reach, but it was sort of difficult. It wasn't natural. It was sort of a stretch to reach the areas. So they did that and collected these finger paintings and was able to create some sort of heat map that showed areas that are easily accessible for people holding the slates and only had the thumbs to interact with the slates, and areas that were less reachable and areas that were hard to reach but still manageable. And using this, if you want to accommodate these kind of user, you can imagine where you should put your interactionable items on the screen. And what the Windows team have used this for is, for example, is reflected in the app bar. The buttons on the app bar aren't per default placed in the middle of the screen. They're placed on the sides. It's because a lot of people will hold it with both hands, and with the thumbs, they can reach the buttons that are on the side, while they can't reach all the way to the middle. So when you're putting actionable buttons, try to remember that the buttons that will probably be mostly used, put them on the side and not so far in the middle, if possible. So the third one, design principle, is about authentically digital. I think this one is the one that resonates with me the most, but it might also be the one that is most difficult to get through because it's something that requires some sort of new way of thinking. It taps into the Bauhaus, the modern design revolution. Traditionally, like I said or mentioned before, we've been very influenced by stuff from the real world. We sort of had this real world envy, reality envy. And these icons are typically found in most user interface today, like Windows 7 and earlier. It sort of emulates the real world items. It's a metaphor for something physical that you can find in the real world, but they don't really show anything valuable to me about the program itself, except that this app might work somewhat like a calculator, but it's not really a physical calculator. It's a digital calculator, just like with a notepad. It's not a flipping thing. I don't flip open the first page and draw, and then there's not more space on the paper, and I have to use another paper. It's not really the same thing. So what Windows 8 is doing, allowing us to use a new kind of way of thinking to design stuff, to be more authentically digital, not trying to be something it's not, but embracing the digital world and making the digital world beautiful. So you can still use some sort of logo or icon as your front door on your tile. These are examples of tiles that you can put on your start screen. But try to move away from the iconographic world. Like, don't try to move away from that and move into the infographic world, showing more content already on your start icon, which now is the start tile. So we have some examples here showing information so people can glance on their start screen and get information about the app, what's inside the app, what's new in the app, even before they launch it. So for example, you can show what's happened in the app since last time they visited to draw people in. You can show something that's urgent that needs interaction immediately or as soon as possible, just to encourage people to interact with it as much as you want. And there's two kinds of sizes currently that you can design. The small size is square, and that's something that is required for all Metro-style apps on Windows 8. And you can also make sure that you also provide a bigger size that's twice as big, so user can select which size they want to see on their start screen. You can decide to put different kinds of information depending on the size of your tile. So this is an example of a start screen that could look pretty much like this. And it's using motion to give it some sort of personality and making it feel more alive, even though some picture might look static. It's not. So it's really embracing the content first principle and showing content already on the start screen. So it's using pictures, for example, that's inside the picture app. It's using content that's inside the content app already on the start tile. Now, do more with less. It has to do with, again, embracing the content first, content is king, everything else should be stripped off. Now, everything you add to your layout should be there for a reason. You should be able to tell what the purpose of it is. If it's just for decoration, or just because it's cool, or just because it looks pretty, you should take it away. It should be all about the content. Make the content look beautiful, make the content look cool instead. And let's try to take an example. This is a screenshot of Windows 7 with a web page up running in IE9. Now, when I surf to a website, it's the content I'm interested in. I want to read this blog article. I don't want to necessarily see the browser. I don't care about the Chrome on the browser. I don't care about the back button right now or the closed window. I'm here for the content of this blog. So the same view in Windows 8 running IE in Metro View looks like this. You don't even see the browser. It's all about the content. It's giving the content maximum screen estate. So that content becomes the king. That content is in focus. So the user can focus on what's important for him or her and not having to see all those buttons that might cause, distraction. I only need to see the buttons when I need them, not when I read the content. So you might wonder where all this URL bar and all the back button, where do they go? Well, they go into the app bars. So when the user swipe from top or bottom, they'll get these app-specific controls. For example, in the IE, they'll get the tabs on top, and they'll get the URL bar and the back buttons at the bottom. And that's where you should put your actionable buttons and giving your content, your main content, screen estate, maximum screen estate. And you swipe from the side, you give the system UI. For example, swiping from the left, will work sort of the same way as pushing Alt-Tab in the current Windows OS system. And swiping from the other side will reveal the charms. And we'll get into the charms then in a bit. So that lets you take away most of the actionable buttons from the screen and putting them in the bar and hide them away until the user needs them. So if we take an example here, this is a classical traditional look of an RSS reader. We'll see the bevels that try to look like metal even though it's not. So if I were to metrify this, that would be the first thing I would take away. I don't need the bevel. It might look cool, but to me it looks sort of outdated. It looks old rather than modern. So I would put a flat color on it. And then I would try to think which one is the star of the show? What is the star of the show? What does the user want to see when they go into this reader? Well, it's the actual RSS feed, it's the content. So we'll take out the content and make sure that gets a 100% screen estate. And all the different categories, all the different feeds, I'll put in the header on top. And then using different kinds of grid and thinking about putting less is more and make sure that the content will have breathing space. Oh, sorry, before that, you might wonder where the add feed and refresh buttons go. How do I do that? Well, I'll put them in the app bar. So when a person swipes up, they will be able to add a feed or refresh. But they don't have to see those buttons when they're reading the content. And the same thing with the charms. They will be revealed from the other side, from the right side. So if I wanted to make this a little bit pretty, because now it's sort of condensed, it looks sort of cluttered to some people. So in order to make sure that things are more balanced and give more breathing room for the eye, I would use one of those templates and put the content. So there are white space or negative space or whatever you want to call it around the content itself. Now we use typography, text sizes, changing this font, the size of the font to indicate the hierarchical level of what is the headers and what is the content and so on, to increase the text size that are on the top level and decrease the content that's in the underlying levels. Just so people know what's headers and what's not. So traditionally, people use a lot of frames and lines in order to group stuff together to create a layout and to box content to show what's fit together, and another box to show these icons or whatever text, and try to move away from that. Try to take away those lines and those boxes and use white space or empty spaces instead to box things around, and use different font sizes to indicate what's the headers and what is not. It's an interesting way, and also gives room, gives more breathing room, and creates some sort of balance and easiness to the eye. And if you want to, you can use another way of putting the pictures first to make it even more engaging. And again, I want to emphasize that scrolling should be done horizontally to the side. We don't do vertical scrolls in Windows 8. It's mostly to the side. And also make sure your content peek out a little at the side so people know that there's more to see. Because when there's something in our brain that says, when something is half, we sort of know that it's half. If a dog stands behind a fence and you only see the head, you know that it's not a floating head. You know there's something more behind the fence. And that's something that's in our brain. The same thing with content on screen. We see something that's half. We know that that's not the whole thing. We know that there's something more. That's why our curiosity, we will try to, because of our curiosity, we will swipe to see what the rest of the dog looks like in this. In this example, it's the content there. Here's another example of an app. It doesn't have to be laid out in boxes or something like that. This is a weather app, making it look very engaging. It doesn't have to be flat colors. Gradient isn't prohibited. It's okay if you use it in the right way. You don't have to only use squares, and you don't have to only use flat colors. It's okay to use gradients. It's okay to use 3D graphics, as long as it conveys a meaning. For example, the background here is very realistic. It's clouds, and it's actually showing the current weather. If the weather was rainy, the background would show this view instead. So it's not there for adornment, even though it makes the app look more beautiful, but it's still there for a reason, to convey the content. If the background was of bouncing balls jumping all over the screen, that would be something I would take away, because that just something that might look cool the first time, but for the third, fourth time, it's more distracting and annoying than cool. So as long as you add stuff to emphasize the content, it's totally fine. And I would like to just play a little video clip. This is the user study done by the Windows team. They invited one of user, the man over there. He got to see, well, in this example, he was in front of a desktop computer with keyboard and mouse, but he got to see a PDF reader, and the PDF reader looks just like the way it looks on the left side of the screen. You couldn't see any buttons or anything. It was just the article, and this is what he is saying about it.
I like how it fills the screen. Some of the apps that I use on my touch device, when you're viewing PDF articles, that they seem to be cluttered with a lot of left, right, next page, previous page, zoom, font. I don't want to see any of that. I just want to see what I want to see.
So what he is emphasizing is that he likes that the content is taking up the whole screen estate, because that's what he's interested in. When he's reading an article, that's what he wants to be focused on. He doesn't want distraction like buttons, fonts, zoom, next, previous, all those things. Those things are usable, but he doesn't need to see them until he needs to go to the next page or until he needs to change the font size and so on. So put those in the app bar so people will have them when they need them, but you don't need to show them all the time until people need to use it. So the last principle is about Windows One. It might sound like something fuzzy, like we should all hold hands and sing song together and help everybody out, but it's not about that. It's more concrete than that. It's about using what's already built in the ecosystem and what's already there provided by Microsoft to build your own app. So, for example, use the controls that are there. Use the touch gesture that are defined, because other people will hopefully do that too. So when a user learn how to pinch and zoom, they will expect that in your app too. If your pinch and zoom does something else, like close the app, people will get confused. And if you invent your own controls, you are on your own. You have to teach the user how to use your control. The user won't learn that from other apps, which will be the case if you use the already defined controls and gestures. So that's what Windows One is about. And I want to play another video here. It's also from a user study made by the Windows team. It's a woman sitting on the bed over there. She is having a slate and interacting with it with a new app that she hasn't tried yet. It's a picture viewing app. And this is what she says.
So I want to see these one by... Oh, look at that. I squeezed in. There they are. I got it. Your functions repeat themselves over and over and over, which is good. What works in one program works in all. I have to remember that. Right? The pinching in works here. The pinching in worked other places.
So she also appreciate that the functions repeat themselves. That was her words. That what worked in one app when she pinched and zoomed worked also in this current app that she just opened up and never used before. So by making sure the function repeats themselves over apps, you'll be able to take advantage of what people already have learned from other apps, and you don't have to reinvent the wheel by yourself. Winning as one is also about making use of the charms, using the right contracts, because you don't have to create the whole user scenario yourself in your app, but by implementing these share contracts, you can make sure that you create step one in one scenario and somebody else will complete it. For example, if you have if you're making you're making a photo album and you would like people to be able to share the photos that they have in this album, you can just implement the share contract and make sure that this picture will be shareable, and that's it. And then somebody else that is making a Twitter app might say, I want people to be able to share pictures in my Twitter app, and they will implement the share target, receiving pictures. So when somebody are using your picture album app and select the picture and press the share button in the charms, they will get the option if they have this Twitter app to share through Twitter. So you don't have to implement the Twitter functionality, but you can take advantage of somebody that will implement that for you. So doing that is also winning as one, making sure that you complete somebody else's scenario or you contribute to completing somebody else's scenario. So that's a great thing to look into, being able to implement the right contracts. So these are the Metro-style design principle. There are five of them, not more or less. And like I said, I learned them by heart. And you don't, as long as you know the most profound ones and keep them in mind, it should help you along the way to create beautiful Metro-style apps. Well, make sure you pay attention to details, be proud in what you're doing, and be fast and fluid in your app, and also be fast and fluid when it comes to user experience. Make sure the user can interact directly and get feedback immediately. And try not to be something, try not to make your app look or behave like something it's not. Try to make it more as much authentically digital as possible. And focus on the content. Put the content in focus so the user is completely immersed in that scenario. Don't use adornments just for the sake of it, but make sure everything you add has a reason to be there to help the content lift and emphasize it. And win is one. Use the right contracts and make sure you use the already defined gestures and stuff so you don't have to reinvent and be on yourself when it comes to reinventing the wheel. It's not fun all the time. So the key takeaways were these five Metro-style design principles. Pride and craftsmanship, be fast and fluid, authentically digital, do more with less, and win as one. And I just want to end this session with a couple more slides, with a couple more tips before we take Q&A. Remember, when you're designing your UI, that Windows 8 will be run on different screen sizes. So try that before you submit it to the App Store, and also make sure you have the the resources, like the images, in three different formats, so it will automatically scale to fit for the best view possible, depending on the screen size. And if you use scalable vector graphic, you're safe. That's a tip. So these are the different screen sizes that Windows 8 will probably be in. 1366 is the default, you might say, and that's when people can start using SnapView, which I will get into in just a second. But you can imagine that the content should be able to scale and look good on different kinds of screens. So the SnapView is what happens if you open one app and pull it to the side. The user will be able to snap it and then open another application side by side. It's sort of like error snap in Windows 8, having two windows open at the same time. It's just the same here, although here you have a defined snap view size. And what's interesting about this snap view is that the width of the snap view is pretty much the same width as the Windows Phone. So if you have made a Windows Phone app already that embraces the Metro design principles, you might have something to build and reuse for Windows 8 in SnapView. And SnapView is something that is required by Windows by these Metro style apps in order to be submitted to the store. So make sure you do a default view when it's big screen, and also make sure you do the layout for the SnapView. So here are some of the examples of how it could look like. To the right is the full view of the weather app, and the snap view is to the left, if one were to drag that big view to the left of their screen and snap it. It could just be about rearranging the current content. It could be also showing different content depending on which view is on. Like, this is another example of the stock app. And another example of how a session app could look like. And also worth mentioning is that in big view, like I said earlier, everything is scrollable vertically. Well, in snap view, that's when you scroll the other way around. In the big view, you scroll sideways, horizontally. In the snap view, you scroll up and down, vertically. So here's another Twitter app. In the big view, I can both see my tweets and read other people's tweets and also tweet. But if I snap it and have it open side by side with another app, I will only be able to read it, because that's maybe what I want. I want to read the tweets while I surf on the web, for example. And this is an example of the piano that's sort of funny. They just rearranged, so when I snap it, the key are laid out sideways. And I want to give you a recommendation. If you have 1 hour or more to spare, well, actually, 1.5 hour to spare, check out this session if you haven't already done so. It's a recorded session by Jensen Harris from the Build session, from the Build conference that was in September last year. It's a really good session about the 8 traits that make up a great Metro-style app that he goes through and gives demos and examples. So I can highly recommend watching this session if you haven't seen it already. And with that, I'd like to thank you. Like I said earlier, if you have any question, we have some time now. And we also have time throughout the day. I'll be around. And if you have any questions that pops into your head after today, you can always shoot me an email or send me a tweet. My email is open 24/7. If you want a quick answer, you can use Twitter. I am pretty fast at answering there. I don't sleep much. But if you want a long answer, use the email instead. But I might be slower on replying on email. And please fill out the evaluation. Use the QR tags on the screen. Yeah, thank you so much. I don't know if there's a microphone here for questions. Otherwise, since it's such a big room, I don't know if you have a question, maybe wave and you can take the microphone. Otherwise, you can just come forward. Yeah, I don't know how to get up there. Okay. Yeah. So the question was, what is the reason behind making the scroll work sideways instead of just vertically like traditionally? Well, one of the reasons is because there are different kinds of screens. So, and especially in the snap view, if I go back to the screen, of the snap view. Yeah, this is a good example. Like, in order to submit your app to the store, you have to design two views of your app. The default view that looks like that, and the snap view that looks like the one on the side. The thing is, when you snap something, you should remember that your app could also be the one that will be side by side with the snapped app. And that will make your view thinner. So, I don't know how to explain, but in the big view, you see the content scroll sideways. So when you snap something, you just see less of it. So you don't have to create three different views, if you understand. So you only have to create two views, a snap view and the larger view. So if there's a snap view behind you only see less. But it's natural because it will still be able to scroll sideways and not up and down. And just by making sure everything aligns and scroll along one axis creates a balance. Otherwise, it will be confusing. It will be like moving around a map trying to find something. So that's one reason to only scroll along one axis. Yep. That was a good question. Yeah, so the question was, how will Metro style apps look for producing content instead of just consuming them on those types of apps? Well, Metro style design principles are more profound than just defining big buttons or bold colors and flat items and squares. I think the Metro design principle will work no matter what kind of application you're creating. But I understand your question. And I think we might see some examples of it sooner or later. And I'm hoping that will be sooner than later. And I don't know if that's an answer, but that's the way I can say it. Yep. Well, if you have any more questions, you can always come up to me afterwards. Otherwise, I hope you enjoy the rest of the Danish Developer Conference. Thank you again.